You do smell good. Let me smell.
Mm-hmm. Don't I?
Yeah, you
Thank
smell
you.
good.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 81. I first want to say hi to everybody that's on, and I'm sure more people will jump on as the hour progresses. Hi to Melanie, to Donalda, to Matt and his daughter. Matt, maybe you can type in your daughter's name so we know who we're looking at. Jolene, Chasa, Millie, Kristen, Lindsay, can you give me your daughter's name? Helen, Karen, Mary Jo, Nikki. What is it, Matt? Oh, Matt just unmuted and then muted.
This is Madeline.
Hi, Madeline. Welcome.
I have two nieces named Madeline. I love that name.
Welcome to the Zen Talk. Oh, and there's Tatum, Lindsay's young lady.
Hi, Tatum.
Okay, so I don't have anything pre-written. It's so funny, like my work schedule is pretty light and I'm really busy.
Well, you know, somebody said that, I think it was Helen. She emailed or texted and said, is it weird, you know, that we're supposed to be home and doing less, but I feel more busy?
Yeah.
But see, I think that's very, for those of you who are feeling that way, first of all, we posted a podcast today and one of the things we talked about is how thoughtful, I don't like the word careful, but how thoughtful we have to be when we're talking to groups of people, because there are some people that, you know, I've been on enough Zoom calls now to know that there are some people that are literally staying home with their kids, doing e-learning, maybe making dinner, you know, trying to work from home a little bit, and are pretty contained and either bored or somehow feeling busy by because they have to clean cabinets. And then there are people who are waking up in the morning and having to go to a really dangerous job. And they are trying to figure out childcare and trying to figure out how to stay healthy and then coming home and sleeping in the basement because they're trying to keep their family healthy. And so like, we're not all having the same experience. And I've been on a lot of Zoom calls where people are like, this is great. This is great. And there's nothing wrong with feeling that way. That's, you don't need to feel bad about that. But when we're talking to other people, we have to remember that they're not all having the, you know, same experience. And when I say this is great, I don't mean that people love a pandemic, but they're enjoying the time with their family. So what I was going to say about being, sometimes when we don't have a really tight structure, mm-hmm. things get lost.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, obviously this is not a vacation, but I'm kind of in a vacation energy. And like, I think of like on a regular day, like a month ago on a random Wednesday, I had probably done
80 things,
18 different things.
Yeah, me too.
And I still feel frazzled, yet I've ate. I haven't even showered yet. I meditated. I did 31 push-ups.
You did, Skylar, our kids are e-learning and she had to do PE. She had to do a bunch of things for physical education.
I did some jumping jacks and some other things, but,
JC's birthday.
JC's birthday.
Today's our oldest daughter's 17th birthday, so we had to decorate the house. And
we might even ask you guys to sing at the end. Who knows?
She's up in her room doing.
I know, but
studying.
We can play it back, sweetie. This is technology. So I just put in the chat box. What's your number? One means life is good. Five means you're pulling your hair out if you have any hair. So I see that Jennifer's a 3, Kristen's a 2, Donalda's a 1. Jacqueline or Matt is a 4. Emily says something that I think we could all relate to. I could be a 1 minute and then 5 the next.
Me too.
Mary Jo's a 3. Melanie's a 1.5. Jolene's a 3. Millie's a 2. Wow. Everybody's wavy gravy.
Well, we're in the middle. I think that there's a normalization. We've been home now for over 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And when I say a normalization, I don't mean, again, it's not like, oh, I hope it continues, but things are becoming a little more routine. My expectation is not like, oh, I hope we can go out today. Like, I know exactly what to expect, or relatively speaking. And, you know, we're in a zone a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So as you guys figure out who wants to go first, we did a podcast yesterday. It's up as of this morning at 5 a.m. I was kind of scatterbrained for a lot of different reasons. I don't feel like I did a good job with what I wanted to communicate. I usually feel really good after a podcast. But yesterday, because I told Kathy, so usually I'm going to say, you know, like this is how the show goes. We'll wake up, it'll be Monday, and I'll say, do you have something? And what that means is, do you have something for the show? And Kathy always says, yes. Or she says, I'll have something, don't worry. And then I had all these kind of like weird, unrelated awarenesses. And I'm like, don't worry, I'll take it. I'm on. And then you just kind of riff off of whatever I pull up to the podcast. And I had like 5 different ideas and I tried to connect the dots and I don't feel like I did a really good job. So I'm just trying to go easy on myself.
So did you want to explain? There's 2 people who have questions, yeah, but did you want to explain something?
Well, I talked a little bit about a book called Atomic Habits, and they had these 4 laws, and one is to make it obvious and one is to make it sad. It's like, what habits do you want to cultivate and bring into? And it's like systematizing habits.
Right.
Either enriching the good ones or making bad ones a little bit less likely that you do. Like, let's say you eat too much chocolate cake. Well, step one is probably not to have chocolate cake in your fridge.
Okay.
So, and you know, there's like, so for the bad ones, make it hidden or make it invisible, make it.
I know where you're going with this, because this is what you did on the show, but when you're talking about a book, people can't remember all these things.
I know.
So you just have to say, this is what happens in this book and this is what I'm taking from it. And that's about it.
So this
if you try and go through all the things you're learning, I'm not gonna do that. Nobody
So here's
cares.
The one thing that I want to share, and then we'll get into questions, because it looks like Melanie has something and Matt
3
has
people
questions.
Have questions. Yeah.
Okay. Can you shut that off?
Sure. Keep talking.
In the very beginning of this book, it talks about, you know, how, like sometimes you start exercising and you don't notice a difference for 21 days. You're not losing any weight. You're not getting any stronger. You don't see any more muscle tone in your body, and it's kind of frustrating. The one example that the author gave that really impacted me, and maybe this will help you guys, is think of you sitting in a room that is 26 degrees, which is below freezing. And in the room, there's a table, and on the table, there's an ice cube. Well, at 26 degrees, what happens to that ice cube?
It drips.
No, sweetie, it's 26 degrees.
Okay, it stays frozen. See, right. I'm getting lost already.
I know.
Okay.
So I need you to zero in
on
it.
Okay, keep going.
26 degrees.
Yeah, 26 degrees.
What happens to the ice cube?
It stays frozen.
27 degrees, what happens?
It starts to
melt. No, nothing happens.
Oh.
It stays frozen. 27, what happens?
It stays frozen.
28.
20 stays frozen.
29, 30, 31, 32.
Okay.
32, it starts to melt.
Ah.
So between 26 and 31, you don't see any difference.
Correct.
But what the author says is things are happening even though you don't see anything happens. And what he says is energy is getting stored. So think about when you want to work out or whatever, even though you don't see any difference, there's a lot happening underneath the surface or behind the scenes. And that's one metaphor that helped me.
All right. I like it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how impactful was that?
We talked about this yesterday. Sorry.
No, but I didn't talk about the ice cube yesterday.
Okay, I like
this.
The
was
ice cube.
New information.
Okay, I like it. I get it, and you're into it, and you should just email Todd because he loves this book.
It's about
Can
the
you tell?
It's about the ice cube.
It's just hashtag. It's about the ice cube.
All right. So for some reason, Kathy's computer is a little bit weird.
Go up the
where?
Cup, just quick. Why are you in this?
I'm trying to get out of it.
Okay.
Hold on. But now I need to see the chat, sweetie. Because I can't read the questions.
Okay. It was on the side. Oh, I know what I did. Oh, no.
Oh.
Gallery view.
Hang
on. Is it full screen? I don't know.
Oh, there it is.
Okay, now we can go. Sorry, guys.
All right, so who wants to start? Millie, blah, blah, blah.
Millie, we were on spring break last week. That's why last week was really not too much of a
big deal.
We're
going to go over to Matt. Matt first, even though it says Jacqueline. But I know that I've met Jacqueline, and that's not what Jacqueline looks like. Hi, Matt.
Jacqueline's in a work call right now, so she'll be joining us in 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
Sweet. What do you got?
Here. The question I have is, I think I'm dealing okay with the working from home kind of isolation thing, but where I'm struggling a bit is the uncertainty. So I have a couple of things going on now. The first being, we found out a few weeks ago that we were getting posted back to Victoria so I can be with my other daughter. Very excited about that.
Yeah.
But now the virus is effing all that up, and it might not happen now because no one's moving.
Mm-hmm.
So the uncertainty of that is one. And then two, the other uncertainty is that I heard this morning that I might get called out to support the Canadian Health Services something. So I might be going out working with people again, which has its own concern. I'm not like a healthcare worker, so not quite that level of anxiety, but kind of somewhere in the middle between that extreme and the extreme of staying at home. So I might be out working with groups of people. I think the job is going to be helping with the supply chain of personal protective equipment, like masks, gloves, trying to coordinate all of that and getting it sent out. So I'll be working, potentially working with a bunch of people doing that and then having to come home and, you know, dealing with that. And so I'm like checking my phone every 10 seconds, seeing if I have an email saying, yep, you're going out, or no, you're not. Mm-hmm. I don't know yet. Mm-hmm. And it's causing a lot of stress. Just today that my stress level has gone up probably 500%, where I'm like, I don't know. I don't usually check my phone that much, and I'm just waiting for an email to come in saying, yeah, you're doing this, or no, you're not. Mm. So I'm finding that really hard.
So first of all, if you have to go out and do your thing, I just want to bless you and thank you for keeping our world safe. So thank you, Matt. So you use the word stressed, I think, two or three times. Can you give it a name aside from stress? Is it anger? Is it sadness? Is it fear?
Yeah.
What, because you gotta, you know, we talked about naming it to taming it. What is the feeling?
Just, I guess, anxiety linked to the uncertainty, mm-hmm. I guess would be a better way to describe it. I don't know. Is anxiety a good enough word?
So no, it's not good enough. I'm gonna push back on you, because that's what I could do, because I know you and you were at the pre-conference workshop. What feeling, what emotion, us guys, we're not good at saying we're afraid or we're angry or we're sad or we're even joyful. So I'm going to challenge you, Matt, and say, what are you feeling?
I guess I feel scared that I can go out and potentially get the virus and bring it home.
That's what I feel too.
Thank you. So, mm-hmm. so because what a lot of times, like, we'll be like, well, this is what you need to do. It doesn't, nothing happens until you admit how you're feeling. And if you're really good at it, maybe you can even identify it in your body, like it's in your gut or your heart or your jaw or your shoulders or whatever. And I'm not going to push you that hard on that right now, Matt, but that's the starting point, is what is the feeling? And for you just said, I'm afraid. That's such a wonderful admission, which is not something that guys are used to revealing about themselves.
Well, and I would just say, even though I know you're talking about men's work here, that is gender nonspecific. That's how I feel every time I go to the grocery store. And you're going to be doing something a little more, the expectation, the demand, it's your job, you have a duty, mm-hmm. and that kind of, you, there's no choice, mm-hmm. and that's what, like Todd's right, it's fear, but then on top of that is the anxiety of I have to do this, mm-hmm. And that is, you know, uncomfortable.
So for me, you know, if I was coaching you, which I'm not right now, Matt, but can you just bring a sense of acceptance? Because usually, like, this is uncomfortable. Being afraid is an uncomfortable feeling. My first step would be like, can you accept this feeling in your body? And that's not an easy thing to do. And it's still something I'm struggling at. But, you know, we can throw out all these different ideas at you that are very content-based. But for me, it's like, can you accept the feelings of being afraid right now? Can you admit it to Jacqueline? Can you, like, start expressing some of these things? Not to Madeline, but to somebody who can handle it. So maybe it's to Jacqueline, or maybe it's to a good friend or something like that, because I feel like that might be a good step for you, is just to be able to deal with it. You got to admit it. And, you know, the four A's that I've been taught in my coaching practice is, as far as you being afraid, can you acknowledge the fear? Great. That's step one. If you can even go even higher, that can you allow the fear? Number three is, can you accept the fear? And then lastly is, can you appreciate the fear? Like, what is this fear here to teach you? And I'm not going to go through all that with you right now, but, you know, I just feel like just to be able to verbalize and identify this feeling is a really good first step.
Yeah. And then when you feel it, to just breathe it, you don't need to change it. Like, I think that's the thing about fear and sadness is we're like, ooh, I'm feeling this and I shouldn't be. So how do I change it? I don't like the fourth one where it's appreciate. You don't have to go to that yet, but accept is like, this is scary. And I think everybody on this call would be like, yeah. You know, and we have healthcare workers on this, you know, call, and we have people in government on these calls, and they're like, this, and military, like you, this is not easy stuff. And it's, so we're with you. Like, and you can just, when you feel that, you can breathe. And the reason I'm giving you breathe is, it sounds so simplistic, like just breathe, but it's that thing we were talking about, that Tonglen breathing, where you're afraid and you breathe it in and then breathe out some compassion for yourself, instead of, wow, I shouldn't be afraid, or why am I so anxious? Of course you are.
And to be
where I'm struggling is the fact that right now there's nothing to accept.
Right.
I don't know if my posting is canceled. If it was canceled, I could work to accepting that. Or if I knew, yeah, you're doing this, I could accept the, okay, I have to do this, but right now I don't know. So I don't have either. I don't have the ability. I'm trying to accept the uncertainty.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Yeah, you don't have any answers right now. And you may be sitting for a week or a day or a month before you know what the answer is. So can you accept this feeling of uncertainty, which really makes you scared? And like everybody on this call, I'm sure, can insert their own example of what they're afraid about. So a lot of times I try to get ahead of myself with this, like, okay, can I accept my fear of what might happen? It's in this now moment, can you give yourself one small breath of acceptance? Because that's where life happens, is in the now moment. So I don't know if any of that helps, Matt, but that's what I got for you.
And two other things, Matt, that I'm thinking of. One that we've talked about a lot on this, on Zen Parenting, but I think on Team Zen too, is the dress rehearsing tragedy thing that Brené Brown talks about, is sometimes the uncertainty drives us to worst case scenario, and you don't have to play that out in your mind. You don't have to figure everything out. You're just going to take it one step at a time. Hi, Madeline. And you're just going to, you don't have to be like, well, if this happens, then I'll have to do this and this. Just stay here. The uncertainty you feel is the kind of uncertainty when we're waiting for a phone call from a doctor, or if we're sitting at a hospital waiting for somebody, or if we are, you know, figuring out, you know, if our child is coming home, you know, and they're not home yet. It's that kind of, I just have to be here because there's, you know, there's nothing I can do right now. And
you happen to be with Madeline right now. And at this moment, you're good. Are with one of your children. I know, I think you have three, Matt, and two of them live with you. And then there's a third. But in this now moment, can you accept where you are right now? You happen to be on a Zoom call with a bunch of people, loving, caring people, with your amazing daughter on your lap. And that doesn't mean to push the fear away, but there's also some beauty in this now moment as well. So before we move on, Matt, do you have any thoughts? Is that helpful? Don't tell me what I want to hear, to be honest.
No, that's all really good. Only Madeline wants to say something quickly. What did you want to say, sweetie?
Yes.
I can talk like a cat.
Let's hear it.
Yes. That's right. Yes.
You're four. Five.
When do you turn five?
In July 7th.
Ooh, my birthday's in July too, Madeline.
July what?
7th.
Oh, nice. Awesome. All right. Well, Matt, hopefully that helps. And thank you for leading by example with that, because we're all afraid on different levels about different things. So thank you for that. All right. So now we are going to go to, oh, and by the way, Millie said square breathing. Sweetie, maybe you could answer this. What's the breathing that you mentioned?
So I'll answer Millie's question and Helen's question. The breathing that I was talking about, yes, it is a Buddhist practice, a type of breathing. It's called Tong Len. Tong is, it's about taking in and letting go. So like Tong is taking in and Len is letting go. That's where the word comes from. And basically what it means is when you feel fear, when you feel something, instead of pushing it away or suppressing it, you breathe it in. And then what you exhale is compassion for yourself and others. And if you are watching the news and you see people who are struggling or not getting what they need, or healthcare workers, you breathe that in and you breathe out compassion for them. What that does is that keeps you present and it keeps you from turning away. And then it expands you rather than contracts you. The other question, square breathing or box breathing, like Millie said, that kind of breathing is just, you can call it 4-4-4-4. You just breathe in for four, hold for four, breathe out for four. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then hold for four.
Yeah. And there's a million different types, but those are.
I do 4-7-8 more.
Yeah. That's another one brought to us by that.
Andrew Weil.
It's a really good one.
So box breathing is where you just do 4-4-4. And 4-7-8 is breathe in for four.
Hold for seven and then exhale for eight. And it doesn't have to be seconds. It's just increments. So there's some beauty in the way that Andrew Weil explains it is when you hold for, when you breathe in for four and hold for seven and then breathe slowly out for eight, there's something really interesting that works in the biochemistry of your lungs and your breathing process if you do it.
Well, especially right now, like I think that what we need to keep doing is keep our heart open and our mind open. And these breathing exercises do that, because fear shuts us down and we'll contract, and we can't stay away from fear and uncertainty because it's the truth of the moment. So we can't be like, no, just go, you know, pretend it's not happening. It just is. So then when you're feeling it, do your box breathing, do your Tonglen, do your 4-7-8. I mean, yoga teachers have been trained in like a million different kinds where you can breathe in left side, breathe out right side. I always need a Kleenex when I do those.
The thing I like about 4-7-8 is after the eight, you don't have to wait to inhale, because you can sometimes get lightheaded with the 4-7-8. So after the 8-second exhale, you can inhale right away. Whereas with the box breathing, you've got to hold for another four.
It's why I always think I'm doing it wrong, because I'm like, okay, I breathed out. Aren't I
box
done?
Has four steps and Andrew Weil has 3-4-7-8. All right. We're going to move over to Mel. Oh, by the way, we described that in better detail in one of the podcasts last week when we talked about the Tonglen breathing. I forget which one it was.
It was called Tools for Change.
There you go. All right. We're going to head over to Melanie. Hey, Melanie.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a question that kind of ties into one I had last week. It's regarding screen.
Mm-hmm.
I have adapted to letting a lot of that go right now. We're on spring break. Actually, we had 2 weeks of e-learning and now we're on spring break.
Okay.
But I have a concern specifically with my 13-year-old son. He is on his phone since spring break has started, because he's been very good about doing his work and getting all of that taken care of. But since spring break, he basically, his days consist of phone, eating, Xbox, and very little interaction with us. So while I don't want to be obsessed about his screen time, I feel like I'm concerned that he's isolating himself. So I'm not sure how to either be with that, or is there something else I should try? Mm-hmm. Again, I don't want to create a conflict. And I know that out of my three, he's my oldest and he definitely misses his social circle. Mm-hmm. But they do connect over Snapchat. They do connect over the Xbox. So I'm just wondering if I feel like I don't know if I'm concerned for no reason, or is this the beginning of a bigger issue?
Mm. Wow. So I think we can all relate to that with kids having the opportunity to have screen time. So the first question is, where are you with it? It seems like I'm just picking up on your energy. It seems like you're kind of like, you know, a lot of times we get triggered like these darn kids. I'm not getting that vibe from Melanie really right now. You seem pretty chill, which is
my other two are doing screen time too, but they're interacting with each other. Like, and there's always been a disconnect between my oldest and my middle, especially, and then now my middle and my youngest.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like we have an opportunity to change that since we're all together, but there's a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
And again, he's 13.
Yeah. And I can also appreciate, you know, isolation is sometimes scarier for boys or men, for me, because guys tend to move inward and girls sometimes move outward. And that's just a hasty generalization, but I can hear why you might be a little bit more concerned. But first of all, 13-year-old is a really weird time for any young person, boy or girl. So it seems like you're giving him space to kind of help him navigate and figure out what that is. It seems like you're pretty open right now, which is really good. But I also would encourage you to set up some loving nudges to like, okay, because we do that with our kids. Like, you got to get outside every day.
Well, what if we, like, let's go back and forth with this instead of you giving, like, what I'm hearing is that it's your spring break, and pretty much before this, he was doing his work, and he was doing fine, and then now he's on his phone, and he's on Xbox and everything, and some of the language you're using is that he's isolating, but he's not, because he's with his friends on Xbox, and he's with he's talking with them on phone, the phone. So he's not isolated. I know just we're all in isolation. Yeah, that's what I was going to correct is like he's isolating, but really he's with people. So I think where Todd was going to go is that what's one or two times a day, like dinner or lunch and dinner, or dinner and a movie, where you say to him, you can do all this and I support you in Xbox and everything because I know you're with your friends, but there's just 1 hour in the day or an hour and a half in the day where it's just family time. Not, I want you to do something for me, but it's be really thoughtful about your language, because if you're like, I need you to come downstairs and be with us.
And the energy behind your language.
Then he's like, but if you're like, it's just family time that for that hour.
It's what we do.
Yeah, it's just what we do.
That doesn't mean he's going to say yes. Great, can't wait.
Yeah, no,
not going to.
I've tried that, and it doesn't. He won't do it. He comes down like for meals. He will come down when he feels like it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm definitely less structure when it comes to schedule. Like even with the e-school learning, I'm not saying you have to be up by this time and start at this time. They do have to finish by 2 o'clock. So that's pretty much I want them to eat by 9:30. So there's a schedule, a looser schedule around meal times, because I need that for my own, you know, sanity. But he has been resistant to that for the longest time. Anytime I say anything about family time, it's like,
what if you had a conversation with them and said, you know, let's get on the same page about when dinner might be, instead of you saying, you know, dinner's at 5 or 6 or 7, saying, when would it be good for you? And because then maybe we can all figure out a time that works for our best. I mean, maybe you've had these discussions, but I think it's time for you to, and all of us, to get creative on how it is that we are kind of approaching the same problem, because the one thing I don't want you to do is keep doing the same thing over and over and over, thinking, expecting a different result. So is there an opportunity? Is there a space for you to have a conversation with him about mealtime? Like, let's have one meal together today. What time might be good for you? And then a conversation would ensue.
So I've tried that, and this kind of ties into some of the podcasts that you've had recently, specifically about teenagers getting enough sleep. From what I'm gathering, or for what I've observed, any chance he gets to stay up as late as possible, he will take, which lately has turned into going to bed after midnight and waking up at noon.
Mm-hmm.
Which for me, my biggest concern about that is him not eating with the rest of us, even like once. Mm-hmm. So his breakfast will be, he'll just come down and fix himself something, and I have some anxiety about that. I'm not sure if it's just because I want all of us to be together, or because I am concerned about what he's eating. Cause it's usually, you know, and I don't know if I should just let that go, because I feel like we're going towards not having any more school for the rest of the year. And if I'm going to be working from home, right now I'm not working, but I'm in healthcare, so we might be transitioning to telehealth, and I'm going to need to have some type of, you know, some type of schedule if they're going to be home learning, and I'm helping them with that as well as working. So,
don't go there yet, because that's later. Like, just do right now, because if you're like, but then what if this happens? What if this happens? That's like unsolvable.
Okay.
Because you're like right here. But I guess my question would be, when we talk about family time, what does family time mean to him? Why is family time not for him? Like, what is he trying to not do?
I think the majority of it is he feels like we're all boring, which I understand.
Okay.
But I think a deeper fear for me is that there's some subconscious, I'm trying to find the right word. Hatred is not the word, but jealousy between him and his younger siblings.
Okay.
And long term, there is a fear of mine that he will not be close to his siblings, and they're already super close, and I would hate for that to be the case. And I also feel like it was my responsibility and I didn't do what I was supposed to do.
Well, first of all, he's only 13, so nothing's done. Like I guess my point is that because I'm listening to your question, you're in the past and the future and what's going to happen next week. And really all you need to do is today. And I know that can sound really like, oh, so, but what about all these things? But you can't do tomorrow without today.
No.
So I know. The question is when you, and again, it's not about structure. It's not about forcing him downstairs. It's not about feeling bad or guilty. It's just, how can you, because what I thought you were going to say is that family time, and maybe it is like he's 13 and everyone's just kind of boring to him, and that there's truth in that for sure. But it's like when he is in a family structure, are people like, does he feel like people are asking him questions and that they wonder where he is? Like I'll say it this way. Out of my kids, there's one of my kids who prefers being alone more. But what I make sure I do about 5 times a day is go knock on the door and say, how you doing? Not come downstairs or be different or be with us or be like us. I don't guilt her. How you doing? Do you need anything? You want a glass of water? No? Okay. What are you watching? Okay. I'll watch that later too. I'm trying to connect with her the way she is rather than say, you need to be like us. Does that make sense? Yes. Like, can you meet him where he is with no judgment and no expectation? And I don't mean ever. I just mean a few times a day where then coming downstairs doesn't feel like, oh God, I'm walking into the 4 of them telling me why I don't belong. Even if they don't say it, they're looking at me. Where have you been? Well, we've been, you know, and again, I'm not talking about you specifically because we all do this like with our kids when we want them to do something. Sometimes we're a little passive aggressive and a little like, we're having so much fun and you're missing it. And it's like, that doesn't prompt change. That creates shame. So instead it's like during the spring break, because it's not normal because the structure is totally messed up. Just check in on him and be like, you know, and if the ideal would be dinners at 5, but if you're saying, you know, I can't say to you force him, you know, I'm not quite sure what the, you know.
And, you know, I think there's some creativity would be a good approach. And, you know, Millie just said something on the chat, like, what games does he like? And say, I'm going to suck at this game, but can you teach me this game? Like that's some of the out of the box thinking. Or what show are you watching right now? Can we watch one episode together as a family just so we can, that way he knows that you are interested in what it is that he's doing versus come downstairs and be with the family so you can see what we're doing.
Or what are you watching? I'm going to watch it too. And then let's talk about it afterwards. Because one of my children, actually 2 of them prefer to watch things by themselves sometimes. Sometimes they come down and watch with us. But instead of being like, oh, I'm so disappointed. It's like, I'll watch it too. And then we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to meet him instead of having him adhere to everything that everybody else is doing. It's like, and it can be both, but it sounds like for spring break, I'm talking just about today, not for tomorrow or next week, because you said in the last 2 weeks, he's done pretty well with e-learning. So mm-hmm. But right now his structure's totally off. I actually love that he's sleeping that much. It sucks.
I do too. I'm just, I guess, nervous about the future.
And don't do that, because 13-year-olds should sleep 12 hours occasionally.
But I also don't want him to go to bed at midnight after us, because that's not...
And is he on screen after midnight?
Well, so that ties into another issue. He is not adhering to our contract about being off and putting his phone in our room. And there are times where I forget to turn off access. And he definitely will take advantage of that, obviously. So for the most part, no. But he does have an Alexa in his room and he listens to music. So how long he's doing that, I don't know. And with regards to, you know, my husband's also a healthcare provider and he is working right now. And it's just it doesn't fit well for us to go to bed and him to stay up. And, you know, it's just not... I'm not comfortable with that. Like, I want to know that he's in bed and the screen's done, and I don't want to have to police, but I feel like that's what we would have to do. So
yeah,
like, I'm fine. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say that I don't, and again, I'm totally hearing you. I'm not, I don't want my kids up super late either, but I guess what if it wasn't a concern? What if he went to bed after 12 and you didn't worry about it and you let go for spring break? Mm-hmm. And you did at 11:30 or 12 shut off whatever access he has, and he listened to music on Alexa. I don't think I like, because what you're saying is then this causes this. But what if it's the same thing with letting go. What if I let go of this, then this part isn't so stressful, because really like worrying about what he's eating and stuff. I'm just doing spring break right now.
Okay.
And when you get back into the normal structure where he has to go to school, you can go back to 9:30, here's food, and you know, and it's not going to be perfect, but what's happening in this conversation we're having is I don't want this to happen, but I have to do this. I don't want this to happen, but I have to do this. And it's like, what if one of these things, you just let go of it and try to make spring break about connecting to him with less expectation because it's spring break. And letting him free a little bit.
And in addition to that, this is all about not what you say. It's from what, because the kid is going to pick up on energy. If you come to him wanting something, he's going to pick up on it.
Totally.
Even if it's like, hey, I want to watch your show. If you're coming at it from an energy of, I need to connect to you because I feel incomplete.
Connect with me, please.
He'll feel that. Whereas if
it's always my energy,
I know. And he feels that, which is why he's like family time.
Yeah.
Because that's too much pressure. Family time. That's why I ask, because sometimes we're like, come down for family time. And a lot of kids look at family time as being like really hard, and family time should be like the chillest part.
Sometimes it helps to parent our kids as if it's our neighbor's kid.
Yeah.
Or our friend's kid.
Or your friend.
How would you do it differently? Let's say it's one of your son's friends that you like. How would you approach him in this situation? And that's not necessarily going to answer all your questions, and you're going to get this aha moment, but just to maybe shift the energy a little bit, like how would I, invite this person to
this 13-year-old boy.
And how would I approach it if I wasn't the kid's parent?
Because you'd probably be lighter and funny, and you'd want to engage him. And that's what your son needs from you. Because the background of what you're talking about, the background story you have, is he's not close to his siblings and it's my fault and I feel bad about that. So I'm going to go after him and get him closer to us so I don't have to feel this. And all of that's a made up story. And so, but then what you're doing behavior wise comes from that story. And that's just one story. I got a million stories in my head, but there's you have to be thought. That's why I'm saying just do now, because if we try and create the structure for him for the rest of this uncertainty, it just won't, work.
Well, and just to bring it full circle to Matt's first question is we'll move on to Emily. What are your feelings right now? Is it sadness? Is it anger? Is it fear? And not to project that onto the kid, but instead just, this is your own work. This 13-year-old boy was put here for you to learn something about yourself. So this is really an invitation for you to explore how can I approach this differently? And can I accept that I'm afraid that my son might be a little detached this year because he's 13 years old, or this COVID-19 is freaking me out and I'm so scared, or I'm angry because, you know, life is hard right now. Like this, it all starts with where are we in this moment and what emotion are we feeling? So I don't know if that helps, but this is here to teach you in the same way my three daughters and Kathy are living with me to teach me about myself.
Well, and I guess overall, this is not just for Malini, but everybody, like, we don't create our kids. Like, it's not, if I do this and create this structure, then I'll make them into a certain person. They just are who they are, and they're going to all be different. And they're, depending on their age, they're going to shift to, like, you know, the craziest thing I could tell you right now, Melanie, that I have three kids who are older, is that your 13-year-old in 2 years may end up being the most outgoing one. Yeah. And your youngest one is like, I want no family time. And you'll say, no, that's impossible. Watch. They change. They don't stay the same. And it's shocking. And you watch them grow, and some of their frontal lobe matures. And so what we do is stand back a little more, rather than I'm shaping you, I'm showing up for you the way you are. And that doesn't mean you let them write, you know, you still have structure in your home and boundaries and expectations. I always have to say that because people feel like, well, then I just get, it's not about them choosing everything. It's about you accepting them.
Can I go deep real quick and then we'll go to Emily.
You're going to read some,
There's a poet Gibran out there named Khalil Gibran, and he's from Lebanon. I think he died in the 50s, but this was his take on children. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you, and they are with you, yet they belong not to you.
Nope, they're not ours.
You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backwards nor tarries with yesterday. And then there's a third stanza, but it's one of our favorite poems on children. So anyways, we're all over the place, Melanie. Hopefully a little bit of that helped.
Yeah, and we're with you. Like, when you're having that bad moment, just breathe us in as compassion. Yeah. Like, this is not simple.
No.
But
no.
It's interesting. Letting go is easier than holding tight. Because holding tight creates more problems. And letting go, and when your brain's like, but then the world will fall apart, it's like, well, kind of already did a little bit, right? So we're already dealing with this. So we're going to be okay.
So Millie asked where she can find that. It's just Google Gibran on children. I think the title of the poem is On Children. I think the name of the book is called
The Prophet.
The Prophet. So, and he has like all these different takes on all these different parts
like
of
marriage
society.
Marriage and work. It's really beautiful.
The reason I love Gibran is because it's really easy to understand. Whereas Shakespeare, you got to like decode everything.
I love
Gibran. So anyways. So yeah, if you find it, it looks like Helen just put it up there, and even copy and paste it and put it in the chat. That way everybody can have it available to them. So totally with you, Melanie. Been there. I'll probably be there later on today with my kids.
But that truth about how different our kids are as they get, it's funny, isn't it?
Well, it reminds me of Rob Bell, because he's like, be careful what you wish for, because maybe like there's a mom who has a four-year-old that never stops talking and you just want them to be quiet. And then they become 13 and they don't share a damn thing with you.
And you're like, but you used to talk to me. Yeah, right. It's like, so that's why it's fun to meet them where they are, because you take advantage of that moment, even if it's that he doesn't need a lot from you right now because his friends are his support system. So it's like, how can I love him and connect with him and appreciate that rather than want him to be different?
Yeah.
It's like, how do we, because someday he might need you every freaking second. Mm. It's funny, my 17-year-old, it's her birthday today, when she was little, she needed me all the time. And I was like, oh, this will never end. And she is the most independent person in the world.
A little too independent sometimes. I wish she needed us more.
Old.
All right. Thanks, Melanie. I really appreciate you
jumping on.
You're welcome. Let's go to Emily.
Okay.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Good, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So like I put in a chat, I don't have like a specific question. I think all of my feelings just really revolve around my six-year-old.
Okay.
Because she is my only. And I've always had this concern about if she's getting enough, you know.
Yeah.
She's going to school and, yeah, like play dates and, you know. And so I just have this feeling like, and I know, like, I always tell myself, like, my issues are so, like, small compared to what is happening in the world and many people are dealing with, people that still have to go to work. And, yeah, but I just found out from her best friend, who's also an only child, that her mom caved and let her play with her cousin.
Mm.
And I just feel like everyone I know, like all of her friends, at least have a sibling or just somebody to play with. And I know this will pass and, you know, it will go back to, I don't know how normal it will go back. Like, I think everything will change, but, and I know Kathy, you've said that it will change for everybody. Just in the moment, like, I guess, I still just, I, I, I really need that assurance that she'll be okay.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, yeah, like, we're just trying to be really careful because I have older parents. So her only physical interaction is with all these adults, and she has virtual play dates with her friends. And she talks a lot. She like talks so much, like her friends don't get to talk. Yeah. So just need that assurance, I guess, that it's okay if she's just like all by herself, like the only kid in the house.
Right. Only kid, but she's not all by herself, and she hasn't been at all. So like, even I'm being kind of, you know, focused on words, but she's not all by herself. She's been with you, and she has people virtually. And it's interesting, like Todd may have something bigger here, but I guess what I would give you is, what if, because there's no, with everybody here, I'd be doing you a disservice if I gave anyone some kind of certainty about anything, because I don't know. I'm a human being like you guys are. But what I like to do is play with my mind a little bit. And Emily, what if this experience was the best thing that ever happened to her? Have you ever considered that?
Yeah, what if the opposite of your story was true?
And not because I'm trying to make up something magical, but what if she's going through something, experiencing something growth-wise in the safety of her home with, you know, talking to friends virtually, and is like able to develop something that she wouldn't have been able to develop had this not happened. And I want you to hold that, not necessarily as truth with a capital T, but as a really strong possibility. So when you have that feeling of, she, you know, what if this is bad? What if, you know, is she being hurt? I mean, I can tell you this with some certainty, she's fine. I mean, is she not getting as much interaction as she used to? Of course not, but no kid is. Even the kid, her best friend, who played with the cousin once, that didn't change some kind of wiring in her. It may have been frustrating and difficult, you know, like who knows? It may have been a horrible play date for all we know. This time is extraordinary. And like you said, every kid's going through it. And I think you're holding up siblings as being like, if you have a sibling, then you're fine. And there's a lot of people on here, including Melanie, who is just, you know, talking about her kids they have siblings and they're not necessarily any better. They're struggling or alone in their room, or, you know, I guess what I'm offering is question your story a little bit.
So I want to provide some structure on this question. So Emily, if you're willing to go somewhere with me, I'm going to go through four questions as taught to us by Byron Katie, and then a turnaround. So it first starts with a judgment, and I'm going to kind of help you spoon feed the judgment. Like, your judgment is, what's your daughter's name?
Emma.
Skylar's her pen pal.
And maybe, so the judgment might be, Emma is lonely, or Emma is not okay, or Emma is socially distant, or whatever. Can you pick a judgment about Emma's experience right now, just for the sake of this exercise?
Emma is, Emma is, I feel like, I don't know what she's feeling.
And it's not so much what she's...
It's not about her. It's what are you feeling?
What is your judgment about what she's experiencing right now? And make it bigger. The whole point of this is to make it bigger and dramatic. And so you want to be as judgmental about this as possible, because it will help when we ask the questions.
Just do Emma is not...
Okay. Emma is alone.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you. So here's the first question. Is that true?
No.
Okay.
Perfect. That's exactly right. This is the fun part.
So we'll skip the second question, because the second question is actually, can you be absolutely certain that that's true? I'll have you answer anyways. Can you be absolutely certain that Emma is not alone?
Yes.
Okay. So the third question is, what happens to you, Emily, when you think the thought, Emma is alone? So like, what happens to your feelings? Do you get scared? What happens when you think the thought, Emma is alone?
I feel very guilty.
Yes. Okay,
awesome.
Yes.
Thank you for that. fourth question is, who would you be without that thought? What that means is, if I could use your brain as if it's a computer hard drive and I remove the thought that Emma is alone, who would you be? What energy would you be emitting if you couldn't even conceive of the idea of Emma being alone?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Sure. So for
How would you feel?
How would you feel if you couldn't even conceive of the thought of Emma ever being alone? How would that feel for you?
Like, if we removed that thought from your brain, how would you then feel?
Remove the thought of her being alone?
Yeah.
The judgment that you have of Emma being alone, let's pretend that that's not even a possibility.
So basically what he's saying is, you said, when you say to yourself, Emma is alone, you feel guilty. Right. So what if we removed the thought Emma is alone and you couldn't even think that anymore? Mm-hmm. Then what would you feel? What would be left?
I would feel like myself again.
There we go. You did it.
And
okay.
And what does it feel like to be yourself? Would you be more energetic? Would you be more open? What would be happening?
I would be very carefree and not having a worry in the world.
Awesome.
Beautiful.
So now here's the most important part of the process, which is called the turnaround. So the judgment was Emma is alone. And the turnaround happens when you take the opposite of that story, and you could, I might have to help you with it, but what would the opposite of the statement, Emma is alone, what would the opposite of that story be?
That she, even though she may be home and distancing, social distancing, her heart is still full. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And she still feels connected.
Yep.
Either to us or to the friends that she sees virtually.
Yes.
So you're already jumping ahead, because the next part is, so the opposite of the story is Emma is full. Emma is connected. So then I would ask you for one or two examples of how that's true right now for Emma. How is she full and how is she connected?
Well, I just bought her some markers that she can draw on the windows with. And it came today, which I went through a whole anxiety like episode this morning because I thought we missed the Amazon truck. Wow. And then I'm telling you, my husband thinks I'm crazy because just little things I cannot deal. If little things go wrong, because I can't control the big picture. So I'm realizing that if I can't control the little things, then I break.
Right.
But we got it. And then as she was starting to paint on the window, she came over to me and she said, thank you, mama, and gave me a hug.
That's wonderful. That's a really good example. So just to expedite this process, another turnaround you can do is, instead of saying Emma is alone, you can insert somebody else into that statement.
Mm, it gets complicated.
Actually, it doesn't. So instead of taking the opposite that Emma is alone, you said Emma is full. Is there anybody or anything they can come up with to substitute the word Emma with somebody or something else?
I don't get that question.
Maybe she does. Does that make any sense to you?
What, do you mean somebody else is alone?
Mm-hmm. Like one of her friends? or maybe, me?
Yes. So not sure if that connects with you, and it may not resonate at all, but a lot of the times we project some of what we're feeling onto somebody else. And you may not feel alone at all, but if you do, I think it's something that there may be some value in exploring that. So if I said, Emily is alone, is there any parts of that that may be true?
Yes.
Okay. Would you care to expand on that?
Well, I feel like because I'm an only child as well. So I need a lot of that social interaction with friends. And I think I'm dealing with this very badly, but I'm compared to my husband, who is, I think he's enjoying this a lot. But I feel it. So it's very paradoxical with me. I find it hard, like tiring to arrange these virtual play dates for her and for myself, or for me, it's more like virtual happy hour. I find it tiring, but I also think I really need it. If I don't get it, mm-hmm. then I feel alone. Mm-hmm. And my husband would call me, like, I think I have FOMO. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to know what is going on. But then at the same time, I also get very, you know, I want to stay away from it, but then I can't. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So here's the thing. When we have a childhood experience that stays with us, we project it on our kids. If you grew up shy and you see your kid having a shy experience, then we say they're feeling exactly the way I did, and I don't want them to feel that way. So I'm going to work my butt off to make sure they don't ever feel what I felt. And that yes. whole system is not true because they're not you. So you're making up a story based on your own unmet needs. And as Todd said, projecting it on her. She could be fine. If you were an only child and it was the most amazing, mystical, magical experience, then you would be watching your daughter right now going, wow, she's having the amazing, mystical, magical experience I had. But because you feel these things, you look at her and you think she feels these things. And she may sometimes, I'm not saying she doesn't have access to feelings. I'm saying our story is not our kid's story. Just because we had a hard time in middle school doesn't mean our kids will. Just because we struggled with friends doesn't mean our kids will.
So we kind of led you through a pretty deep dive, and yeah. you probably weren't ready for that, Emily. So I first want to say thank you for being brave enough to kind of go there. And yeah, it's just like, this is a playground of exploration. Whether we're talking about Matt or Melanie or you, all of these things are here for the purpose of us having a deeper understanding of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And everything you're experiencing with Emma right now is here to teach you something about yourself.
About you. Yeah.
So, what we just did just now, it's a process called, Byron Katie, what is
the work?
The work. Thank you. We actually have done some podcasts some Zen talks a few years ago on it, but all of her stuff is free and she walks you through it step by step. If you Google Byron Katie, the work, it's all there. And whenever I find myself triggered or judgmental, I will sometimes go through those questions and then that turnaround. And then all of a sudden it doesn't go away. It's just a reframe. And it's really, but if you do it from your head, it's not going to be as valuable, which is where I reside. If you could do it from a whole body experience and more as like a meditation and go deep, you're not trying to figure out a puzzle. It's, can you feel these feelings and then gain insight from them? So,
and you can still do the virtual play dates and everything. This is not about you can't do the things you're doing. You know, you can be excited about the markers, but maybe instead of being stressed about the markers arriving, you're just enjoying the markers arriving. Mm-hmm. Instead of being stressed about getting these virtual play dates, you're appreciating the virtual play dates. So it's less about what's showing up and more about how you're approaching what's showing up. Mm-hmm. I always look for kind of fictional characters to help me through these things. And, you know, we just watched Jojo Rabbit the other night, and I've seen a lot of, you know, movies like that, like Life is Beautiful, where like parents have to, whatever our kids experience from us is how they kind of perceive the whole situation. You know, like if they are looking at us and we're overwhelmed and stressed and we have no sense of, you know, we're just kind of, then they think they should be stressed and overwhelmed and worried. And if you're like, you've got these virtual play dates and us and these markers, and this is beautiful as it is, rather than you should have more.
And what's funny is, well, the first question I asked you, Emily, was, is that true? You already knew it.
Yeah.
It's not that she's not alone. Does she have moments of loneliness? Yes. So does every other human being on the planet. So there's an intuition, I judge, inside of you that knows what the truth is. So it's just tap into that when you can.
Yeah, I think so what I'm not comfortable with is I know these things, but I still have like these outbursts and episodes.
Well, and that's another opportunity to look into that too. I mean, it's all an opportunity to look at it.
And when you have the outburst, you have the moment after the outburst to look at it. And you have 30 minutes later after, and not to look at it and feel guilty, but sometimes things come out, just like sometimes sometimes we throw up, or sometimes, you know, like sometimes our body is so habitual. If we've been doing something the same way and thinking the same way our whole lives, new thinking takes a while, and it takes our body a while to adjust. Our body will say, no, we get stressed here. Get stressed with me, please. And we'll be like, no, I'm okay. I'm thinking about this different. But our body sometimes responds and we react. But after that moment of reaction, you can say, I just overreacted. Mm-hmm. There's always a choice. And what we fear is the overreaction, rather than just apologizing for the overreaction. You can handle all of it, even if you overreact. And it's uncomfortable, but I don't want you to feel alone. I don't want you to think, oh, all these people on Team Center, Todd and Kathy, they never have reactions. Are you kidding?
Yesterday.
We have reactions all the time. It's what do you do after, and how do you soothe yourself and not shame yourself, because it decreases. My lag time is shorter. They're not as often, but they still happen. So we have no distance from that.
No.
We're right there with you. Had a question.
Helen did, and then Lauren did. So I don't know if we're going to be able to get to everybody. We're going to do our best. I'm going to mute Emily. Emily, thank you again. Sending you love.
Thank
you. Hi, Helen. Is it quick or is it long?
It's actually, what about I just say it and then you guys decide, because it's kind of like building off what you were talking about. And it's this idea that, you know, for the same situation, one moment you can be absolutely fine about it, and then like it just something, even you don't even know what shifted, but the same thing arises another time and it's like a big problem. So I don't know, like, you know, like the with Emily's example of her kid, you know, like I feel like there's a bit of a parallel there in terms of I've got like one child and we live in Switzerland, and there's a bit of a language barrier, and you know, that's my concern, is that making contact with her friends, and I sort of over worry about that one. So sometimes I'm absolutely fine, but she's kind of like spends the whole weekend like we'll go out together, but she doesn't like play with any of her friends. And then the next time that happens is like it's really a big problem. So, you know, like I know that's my stuff, but is there any sort of way of not going through that sort of loop? Does that make sense? Or but you know what I mean, like the same situation, it's just you, but it's even the same you, but you know, what tools are there to help that?
I feel like a few things that are helpful to me is, number one, it's got a lot to do with your state of mind, where when you're in kind of an open-hearted, like feeling pretty good, having a good week, and your kid does something like, I'm going to stay home, you're like, okay, because you feel pretty good. Whereas the next time they want to stay home, you may feel more depleted, tired, whatever, and it doesn't feel okay to you because you don't feel good. So some of it is us, and some of it is remembering negativity bias, is that our brain looks for problems. And that we naturally just say, wait, if she did that twice in a row, that must be something I need to deal with. And the question is always, as we just did with Emily, is that true? And could we ask a simple question rather than make it a big deal? Like just saying to your daughter, I'm talking about this specific example because this could be with anything, but you know, I noticed that this is the second week in a row that you didn't want to see your friends. Is there something I'm missing, or are you just enjoying being alone? And she may say, no, I'm just enjoying being alone. And it's like, okay. Like, and big picture, if you really looked at her at her age, is it really a bad thing? Like, it's like just re-questioning for her to be apart from her friends for a while, 2 weeks, a month. I mean, right now we're not even given that choice, but I guess nothing Todd and I say could ever keep you from having thoughts. Meaning I can't teach you how to not think these things. What we want to help you with is when you think it, what do you do next? And so like your question is, how do I not cycle? When you think it, try and have another answer to it rather than a cycle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or notice. You know where I've been cycling, you guys? In the shower. Because that's when everything's really quiet. During this quarantine, I notice that when I'm in the shower, I'm trying to solve the world's problems. Like before I get out, I've figured out where we're going to get the equipment. I have figured out what people need to do. And I'm like trying to solve everybody's problem in the shower. And when I get out, I just say to myself, that's not your job. You can't do that. Now, can I keep my brain from doing that? No, because that's what brains do. I'm taking in all this news all day. So I want to figure it out. Just like you want to figure out Emma's life and you want to figure out your daughter's life, Helen, that's what we do. But then what do we do with it after we've cycled through? We say, I literally, now when I put my hand on the shower door to get out, I'm like, okay, leave all that in the shower because you can't solve any of that. JC, come here. Come here for a second. Because it's your birthday. I'm sorry, I just have to get my 17-year-old in here for a second because she it's her birthday and she doesn't get to see any of her friends.
But she gets to see you guys.
This is her birthday, girl.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Matt, and that's Jolene, that's Millie, Kristen, Lindsay, Kelsey. You know this
There's
lady.
There's your Aunt Peg.
There's your Aunt Peggy. There's Donelda, Emily, Jennifer, Helen from Ireland?
She's in Switzerland.
Switzerland. Oh my God, there's so another cool one. Karen, Gail, Nikki, Mary Jo, and Alicia.
Hi, everybody. Nice to meet you.
Happy birthday. We need to all say happy birthday. Everybody's on mute.
I asked her how it felt, and she said, just great.
It's just amazing.
It's so different. I know. I'm sorry. We're just trying to create friends for you.
There she goes. All right. So we went a little long, but that's all right.
Did Lauren want to ask her question? I'll stay.
Lauren bailed. So what?
Okay. I was just going to say, does anybody else have a question, even if other people have to go?
Sure.
Because we went long on a lot of these questions. Anybody else?
All right. So I think we might do it again on Friday. We'll see. We'll see how we feel. See what's going on. Blessings, gratitude, all that to all of you guys. Happy Tuesday, March 31st, April Fool's Day tomorrow.
I know. Yeah. Ooh. Someone said, let's not make it April Fool's Day. Let's make it like Good News Day because we've already had enough fooling things going on right now. But just know that all the feelings you're having, you should be having, that you don't need to push them away and pretend that you're not strong or that you're somehow missing something, like fear, anxiety, sadness, uncertainty. And also when you're having a good time, that's okay. You don't have to feel guilty about that. You don't have to say, I shouldn't be having a good time because look at all these people struggling. That's what's always going on in the world. You guys know that, right? This is intense and it's bigger. But that's what happens every day. There are people, and you have to enjoy the beauty to, you know, in the midst of the challenge.
Gail doesn't have a real question, but she wants to know, does anyone feel like they're food prepping nonstop for everyone who is home? Yes. Not us. We did a little cooking of these potatoes. Mm. Kathy and I don't cook that much, but we teamed up and we cooked some potatoes yesterday and they were delicious.
For any of you who subscribe to People Magazine, it was the potatoes in the back of the People Magazine. They do great vegetarian stuff in People. And I'm laughing that I'm giving you guys a recipe because I do not cook, but I happened to
cook last night.
I did. And these potatoes were easy and they were good. And it had this like good dipping thing.
And we also like to cook frozen pizza.
And we like to cook Jersey Mike's.
Sometimes Jersey Mike's, for those of you guys who don't know, it's a sub shop.
We cook Chipotle.
And sometimes Kathy will say, Mama's cooking Chipotle tonight.
Which means put your order in the, what is it called? The app.
Yes.
Then I'll cook it for you.
Yes.
And bring it home.
And we're cooking pozzita pizza tonight.
We're cooking from a restaurant tonight. It's going to be good. And then we're cooking ice cream from Culver's.
Yes. Home of the Butterburger.
Yes.
All right, guys. Blessings.
We love you. We'll be back in a few days, I'm sure.
Gratitude. Keep trucking.
Hang tough.
Adios.